Okay, so welcome, good afternoon, evening, morning to one and all. This is the first meeting of RFP3B. It's my first time chairing, so if there are any rough spots, I'm sure there will be. I beg your indulgence in advance. And Grace, you're there to yank me if I get out of line, please. So I think we'll follow the same procedure we do in some of the other CWG groups, which is to use the Adobe Connect list as the roll call. We'll pause for anyone who is not on Adobe Connect to announce themselves as being present over the audio line. Okay, I'm not hearing anybody. I'm not hearing anyone, so I guess everyone is all in Adobe Connect. Thank you. So I spent a couple of minutes and I put together an agenda, a proposed agenda for our discussion today. I'm just looking at Shiver's message. Grace, do I have control of the if not, can you just put up
sure.
the agenda
slide? Yeah, I can also. I'm going to go ahead and promote you to presenter, Alan, so that you're able to click through. But I'm happy to do it for you if you'd like.
All right, do it. I don't know. My head would swell if I got that promotion. So we got it up there. Oh, there it is. Thank you. So what I'm hoping to do today is just to kind of put some parameters on what we're doing, try and build some consensus on the scope and the focus of the group, and I even have a couple of tentative ideas that we could maybe thrash through if we get that far along today. So, and really I've kind of set out what I propose to do right here on the agenda page, but let me pause to see if there's anyone has any other different ideas about things, or can you let me start walking through this? Well, thank you. So far, so good. So let's just move down to background and what we're doing here, which is the fact that a number of the submissions made to the CWG, the comments on the proposal from December, had specific concerns about the so-called contract co-proposal. And at the same time, there were at least two submissions, I think, from AUDA and from ALAC that specifically proposed a variant, proposed that a variant be developed that did not include contract code. So that is kind of the jumping off point for as I see the work of this group, is that. So I propose the purpose of the group is to develop a variant on the CWG's December proposal, which I'm going to call the Frankfurt proposal, because going forward we'll see how we may have to relabel things. And that would be the focus of our work, at least for the moment. And for reasons I'll explain later, I propose to call this the internal to ICANN variant. And we'll try and use the acronym IIV. I guess it's because I want to invent an acronym, so I think as well as being promoted, I have invented an acronym. So just stepping back for a moment, the Frankfurt proposal had four essential elements: contract code, CSC, MRT, and the IAT. And I think most of us on the call are fairly familiar with all of those. The work of RFP3 is continuing to elaborate on all of these elements. So what I would like to figure out is how do we avoid any duplication of effort relative to the work that continues to be ongoing in RFP3 relative to what we are doing. And the way I propose that we approach this is that we leave the discussion of contract code itself, as well as CSC, MRT, and IAP, with RFP3 itself except for any changes to these elements that would flow directly from the variant that a variant of variants that we could develop in this group. So, and for example, I note that the outer proposal had some suggestions on, well, they didn't call it an MRT, but certainly one of the operative groups that they were proposing, they would have it be comprised principally of PLD operators, and I see that as an issue dealing with composition of the MRT, and I would prefer that, at least for the time being, that be discussed at RFP3. So I know that. So I think this is a good time to pause, and I see that Alan Greenberg's hand is up. So why don't we let Alan speak? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's convenient to use the same terms as the Frankfurt proposal, if that's what we're now calling it, the Contract Co-proposal is using, but I think we need to exercise just a bit of care. Some of the constructs, and the MRT is perhaps the best example, were created to address certain needs of that proposal. That is, a group that was not ICANN that would have multi-stakeholder representation similar to ICANN. Once we're looking at something that is internal to ICANN, we may not even need an MRT at all. It could devolve to simply decisions of all of the ACs and SOs, you know, as a group, or there could be a very skeleton MRT, but of a very different composition than what is needed in the other proposal. So I don't think we can leave it to them. I think the MRT, along with the overall design process of the internal ICANN, is going to be a very substantive thing, and I think that's going to be, that may well be one of the major simplifications we have over that one. So I would caution, although it's convenient to use the term, let's not be locked in to replicating what they need in their other proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I think what I was trying to say is that at least for the time being, let's focus on what things would look like without Contract Co. Then we can move on to looking to what would happen to the MRT functions, because I think there was a measure of consensus around the need for them or some kind of equivalent of them, regardless of whether there was a Contract Co or not. And hopefully by the time we get to those aspects of the proposal, there might be a little more clarity out of RFP3. So let me turn now to Steve Crocker. Steve, please.
Thank you very much. So I've been watching this and giving it a bit of thought. When I step back and try to make sense of this in my mind, and bear with me for just a second, it seems to me that there are four pieces to the puzzle, generally, of the separability. The last piece is what mechanism should be used, and that seems to be the huge focus for RFP, that most of the work in RFP 3 has been devoted to, and this group is looking at alternate mechanisms. But let me back up for the other three, because I think they're relevant. I think there's, as best I can tell, there's confusion or lack of clarity as to what the definition of the IANA function actually is. And I'll come back to why I think there's confusion and why I think that's quite important in this. Number two, what would it mean to separate that function? There's a lot of talk about the separation being important and so forth, but I haven't heard anything that gives clarity about what would it actually mean after there is a separation. The third part is, what is the criterion which would trigger a separation? What are the standards that are going to be used? And then the last is, as I said, what mechanisms are going to be put in place? And I think that really is the last to be considered as opposed to the first. When I talk about definition of IANA, there's a range of possibilities. In principle, in my view, IANA is a very simple clerical operation and does not involve policy decisions or very much in the way of judgments, except in the very narrow range of the technical operations of the root zone. And in particular, the extremely contentious decisions about whether put something into the root zone or not, whether to do delegations or redelegations, are, in my view, completely outside of the IANA function, even though they are intimately conflated in the existing IANA contract. And this is important because if we're going to talk about under what circumstances we're going to separate that IANA function, I have a feeling that a number of people in the conversation have in mind that this is a tool to use if they don't like the policy-level decisions that are being made elsewhere, and I think it would be helpful to get that clarified. Then equally, if one were to really think about what separation would mean, consider the situation in which the decisions about what goes into the root zone continue to be made by ICANN, and it's only the administrative group that is actually putting those things into the root zone, putting those entries into the root zone, that is done somewhere else. Is that meaningful? I have a strong personal opinion about that, but at least for the purpose of this group, let's take that as a neutral question. And then, again, if one's going to take seriously the whole notion of separation and try to postulate various mechanisms, it's also, I think, requisite to say what are the key requirements, what criteria are going to be used to make that judgment. And so it's that model that I want to bring to attention. And then within that, I think this group has the option of trying to bring some clarity to that and ask what is the minimum required proposal to make sense out of all of this. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Could I just ask you a brief question before we move on to Christopher Wilkinson? You said you made a distinction between ICANN and the admin group. I, having read the IANA functions contract, don't see that distinct contract. So in your mind, decision would continue to be made. When you say ICANN, do you mean the ICANN board or ICANN staff as separate from the so-called IANA admin group?
So I use the term admin group to really meaning the IANA group, just as a way of emphasizing that it's a clerical or administrative function. The IANA contract, so-called, that NTI has, is an unholy mixture, and it's a source of some confusion, I think. The contract attempts to say that there will be a very clean distinction between policy and implementation, and at the same time, it rather awkwardly conflates the two by putting them into the same contract and sort of avoiding the clean separation and making it hard to understand what's going on. But one of the things that absolutely has to happen for the benefit of everybody, it's not just for ICANN or for the ICANN board or anything, but for everybody, is to arrive at a much cleaner distinction between the kinds of transactions that involve value judgments and the kinds of transactions that require execution. And I would state very strongly that what the community needs with sort of absolute certainty is that once decisions are made about what goes into the root zone or what changes are going to be made, that they get executed quickly and with extreme fidelity, accuracy, and that's where confidence is needs to be. That's where the community has to have confidence that it's going to happen that way and that it can't be tampered with. The upstream decisions necessarily involve a lot of judgments, and there may be contention, and they have to be sorted out in, I'll just say, the ordinary ways that those things get sorted out. But once those decisions are made, I guess the point I'm making, and those things should not be viewed as IANA decisions. Does that help?
Okay, thank you, Steve. Yes, thank you. I appreciate understanding where your thinking is on this. So maybe we'll go to Christopher Wilkinson now.
Hi, Alan. This is Grace Abu Hamid. We're dialing out to Christopher now, so it may be a few minutes. We may want to come back to him. Oh, but there's no one else in the queue. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Becky.
Oh, wait.
Come back to Christopher afterwards.
So, Becky, do you want to?
Yeah, I just want to sort of follow on to what Steve was saying. I have been puzzled throughout this process by resistance to the notions that the IANA functions were really operational and that all of the policy development that precedes the operational part of it is work that is clearly assigned to ICANN through the policy development processes. So new GTLD policy is clearly assigned to ICANN, and decisions about what names go in the route are clearly the result of ICANN policy. Similarly, the CCNSO develops policy through the ICANN policy development process, and obviously working with the GAC on those kinds of issues, and the issue before the group in terms of the IANA functions accountability, which is not to say the accountability issue period, because I believe that there is a big overarching accountability issue that we all want to get resolved as well, but that in fact we were overloading the IANA transition process with all kinds of processes and groups and organizations that were appropriate for a policy body but not or an operational body, where something much more like, sort of the delivery of user services would be reviewed and would be the accountability issue and concerns about were the services being delivered in a timely and competent fashion. So I have to say I hadn't really attributed using leverage over policy decisions, I hadn't really perceived what I think Steve is talking about as a desire to use the IANA control of the IANA functions contract as leverage over the policy thing, but I would certainly agree with him. I mean, peculiarly, that leads me to a different outcome in which a light user contract co makes a lot of sense to me, but I do want to express my clear support and agreement for the concern about, sort of confusing what belongs to ICANN as the policy body and what is an operational function.
Thank you, Becky. I think Christopher Wilkinson is available now, so we'll let Chris speak. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, everybody. This is Christopher Wilkinson. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Hi, thanks. Very briefly, Alan, with reference to what Alan Greenberg was saying, for the sake of argument, in terms of an internal ICANN solution, I don't see a big difference between the MRT concept and a specific new ICANN supporting organization for the IANA function. Maybe I've got something wrong here, but just to situate the argument, I would say that we're talking about something like a new supporting organization. In terms of the control and oversight, I've already proposed in a previous posting, well, nearly a year ago, that the IANA function should be overseen by a body with at least the same autonomy from the ICANN board as the current nominating committee. Now, lawyers can look into how to draft that, but I think we need a focus which is clearly autonomous to a high degree from the ICANN board, but mutatis mutandis, the existing nominating committee has some of those characteristics which could be carried over. In relation to what Steve and Becky have just said, yes, okay, but we've been here before 15 years ago, and my assessment is that the only possible justification for the vast energy and interest that has been put into the concepts of contract co and separability is precisely that the ambition is to separate the IANA policy from the existing structures. I don't agree with that. I think I'm on the same line as Becky is. But 15 years ago, we were dealing with that. There was a very well-funded, vociferous lobby funded by NSI to extract the IANA function from the existing structures as they were then. It fell to me at the time to oppose that. I think we've been here before. I'm against it, and I'm not buying into it. So, Steve, I think the ICANN board needs to look into why it is that there's a certain amount of skepticism in the community about the reliability of ICANN board decisions. And Becky, I think we need to modernize, if I may say so, where we were nearly 15 years ago. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Christopher. So
this phone, I believe, star 6.
Thank you. So I guess we're back to Steve Crutcher again. Steve, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Christopher, and thank you, Becky. Let me just say a couple of words of clarification. Becky referred to the policy development process. I guess I want to make a three-part distinction. There's a policy development process whose output are various policies. There are specific judgments that are made for particular transactions, the delegation, redelegation decisions being the primary ones. And I'll stay out of the CC arrange area for a minute. Decisions about, say, Amazon or Wine are, or several others, Triple X or whatever, are highly contentious and aren't policy developments, but they are policy decisions, if you will, or at least value-oriented decisions. And they are not, as I was trying to say earlier, IANA decisions. The IANA process is after those decisions are made. So I think it would be helpful to put things into three buckets: the policy development process, the specific decisions within policies, and then the execution or implementation that goes out to IANA. And so I kind of wanted to draw a line there. With respect to independence from the board that you spoke about, Christopher, I actually think that's an excellent idea, and I've been very strong proponent of that. There should be some group, and I, in the other discussions, I proposed that a limited form of the customer service committee, the CSC, would be sufficient, that has unfettered access to the operation and unfettered ability to speak about it, would be highly desirable. You mentioned the NOMCOM. Another example in my mind is the way the route signing process is handled with trusted community representatives from all over the world who also are not beholden to anybody. But whatever model you choose, I think that sunlight is absolutely important, and that we would have, speaking for myself and I think speaking on behalf of my colleagues on the board, we would have not only no problem, but very strong support for that.
Thank you, Steve. I see that Stefan Johnson has his hand up, so let's hear from CC and Stefan, please.
Thank you, Alan. Yes, I would like again to echo actually Steve's first contribution and Becky's as well. That's really important to this discussion. There is huge importance of actually defining ANA functions, and I'm just as Becky is quite confused about this process due to what we're actually talking about. As someone else also said, there is a need for a clean distinction between operations and functions of the ANA, or the ANA function on one side and the policy on the other side, because they need to be more separate, and in order to do that, we need to define them better. So definitions is still needed to have a good contribution. So the term policy in itself is very blurred right now, but it's generally outside the model, as has already been said, actually. So I've argued for it in written form before, but I'll say it in oral as well. There is a need for a minimalistic solution for this. This transition of the ANA function can't be this complicated. It is too complicated. We heard it from many remarks on the first proposal, and we need to focus on first and foremost the definition, and then the minimum required functions, what is actually needed, and what is fair of the game itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. So there are many, many, let's call them alternative options and proposals that have been mooted on lists and around the internet. And what I was proposing that we do in this working group is to take one particular proposal, which there seemed to be some commonality between AUDA and ALAC on this point, and to try and focus our work on this for the time being. So I don't think we have enough time to make this the working group of all alternative proposals that exist, but certainly to the extent that we can get some analysis done and some work done, we would have the opportunity to potentially look at others as well. But as you see what I have laid out today, I'm proposing we look at one particular variant which focuses on what happens when there is no contract call, and in effect the legal hook to bind in the future would be through the ICANN board. And that's really what I'm proposing that we do as a group. So I think it's important that we pause here and get some buy-in on that point. Otherwise, I think we'll be coming back to everyone's favorite alternative proposal, and what I fear is we will make no progress. So I wonder if I could get some comment on that, please. Thank you. Well, I'm... Oh, okay, here we go. Becky, please. Thank you.
I think that is a sensible allocation of our work, and we shouldn't be revisiting all of the other things. I would just note that I think that the elaborateness of CFC and MRT and IAP and all of those things are a reflection of our not getting this, policy execution on the one hand, and I'm using the word execution to refer to those kind of middle ground, not policy, but judgment calls about policy that Steve was talking about on the one hand, and then the straight operations on the other. And so to the extent that this group actually does spend time thinking about the distinction between, you know, policy execution, and on one hand, and operations on the other, we could help simplify the rest of the work.
Thank you, Becky. I'll turn to my colleague, Alan Greenberg. Alan, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments about what's referred to as the ALAC proposal. It does have a lot in common with the Frankfurt proposal, the draft proposal that was published. A significant part of that was not because we believed that level of detail and complexity was needed, but that seemed to be what was needed within RFP 3 to try to get people to at least look at the content. And I'm being rather blunt here. The preamble to the final submission we made in the public comment forum makes it rather clear that we're looking at a number of principles, and although I have no problem with what we're saying being a base construct, take with a grain of sand the fact that there are things there which were not particularly important to us, but were included to make it more palatable, more saleable, to people who ultimately were not buying in general, so, but has caused this group to come into formation. So, and I think that to some extent is true with the outer proposal as well. They were certainly less bound to the mainstream proposal, as it were. So, although I have no problem with using ours as the base, don't take it as gospel. The overall principles that we were looking at were far more important than the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So I think what I'm hearing here is there are some concerns about the complexity of CAC and MRT and contract coal, et cetera. And what I'm trying to suggest is we already have a group that are looking at those elements of the and I really don't want this group to be discussing those at the same time that they are being discussed in RFP3. Like I'm really trying to isolate what we do so that we really avoid any duplication, and I wanted us to have this discussion. I note that Christopher in the chat had asked Paul Schindler to outline the outer proposal. Before we move to that, I really like to come to a resolution of what the focus of the work of this group is going to be before we start getting into the details of one proposal versus another. So maybe if I could, I might ask Greg Shatton, who is the chair of RFP3 proper, just to speak about how he sees having a discussion of these issues that have been raised here and whether he feels we should be talking about them here or in RFP3. Greg, would you be prepared to speak to that?
Greg Shatton, for the record. Thank you, Alan. I am. I agree with this approach. I think that by focusing on an alternative approach without a contract co and by extension without a contract, and by focusing on that alone, may ultimately change the way we look at the MRT and the CSC, because once one point of reference changes, the other points of reference may look different, just like turning on a different light makes something look more or less attractive. So I think that by focusing specifically on the methodology for replacing what Contract Co. and the contract itself brought to the party, we may revisit thereafter the MRT and the CSC approach. But I think that to try to deal with them all at the same time and in kind of a parallel process to RFP3 would slow down this group and I think muddy the waters as between the two groups what's being handled. I think that if this group were, in essence, RFP3, the only RFP3, then obviously it makes sense to discuss them all, but I think given that there is some ground here, and I acknowledge what Alan Greenberg said, that it's not that by putting our MRT and CSC to one side, that doesn't mean that those are taken as gospel and that we're going to build towards the current representations of those. But rather, I think that by focusing this way, we can then re-examine those seriatim and see where they work and whether that examination... I think the idea is for this group to ultimately kind of branch back into RFP3 and to perhaps to have... But whether and how those discussions take place after a replacement, if you will, or an alternative or a variant to the contract and the contract co is kind of fleshed up by this group is really irrelevant. What's relevant here is to try to have a highly focused, short-term, productive discussion of a viable and substantial proposal that doesn't involve either creation of a contract co or a contract with an outside party. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. So maybe we'll go back to the hands in order that they're up. So it's Cheryl Langdonor. Cheryl, you're up.
Hi. Just a very brief, based on something, Cheryl for the record, by the way, in the chat. I don't want us to get caught up with the naming, and we're already doing that in the chat. I'm talking about an N in a potential INSO and that sort of thing. I don't care whether we call these things apples, oranges, and apricots at the moment, but I think we shouldn't get caught up in the nomenclature so much as the functionality. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Cheryl. Steve? I'm sorry. It's Paul. Paul Schindler. Paul, please.
Alan, I don't want to jump the queue, and I just wanted to check. My hand was up with regards to a more detailed discussion of our proposal. So if you're not yet ready to move on to that, I'm happy to hold, and that's simply why my hand was up. So I'll lower it at the time that you'd like me to go into greater detail about the proposal. I'm here and ready and willing to do so.
Thank you, Paul. And, yes, I really like to get some agreement on what the focus is going to be before we get into any details. Thanks for waiting. So we'll pass again to Steve Brocker. We're hearing a lot from Steve today.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be taking up so much time, but I'm trying a bit to be helpful here. Alan, I thought I heard you say that the focus here, in order not to duplicate work, was on simply on a non-contract co version of the existing framework that was put together, and I think I'm not comfortable with that because the not so subtle point that I was trying to get across is I think an awful lot of the discussion with or without contract co is based upon very indistinct understanding of what it is we're talking about when we talk about the IANA function. And if one steps back and gets some clarity about all that, it's not going to be just a question of whether to have a contract co or not, but relatively quickly and efficiently, I think one can come at the problem of what is needed and arrive at a much simpler solution. And that isn't limited to yes to have an internal or no to have an external version of the contract idea.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Greg Chatton, please. Thank you.
Greg Chatton, I agree with Steve. I think this is actually something that we've done once or twice in the past in the history of this group already. But I think it's helpful to do it as we begin the work of this group, which is to start with a functional analysis before we start with a structural discussion. That's what we did when in Frankfurt, and it's what we did again when we were kind of running up against certain questions about the structure of the MRT. We realized you can't discuss the structure of anything that's intended to do a function unless you know what that function is. So we have to scope the function first and then the structure second. I think that's what Steve was saying, or at least it's kind of congruent with what Steve was saying. Thank you.
I like it.
Okay, then. So, Steve, let me ask you, how would that functional analysis start?
Starting from clarity about what the IANA function is, then one can ask, so what are the risks or threats or vulnerabilities, whichever, those are all different, actually quite specific technical distinctions, but what could go wrong? And then one could ask, how do we protect against those eventualities, either not having them happen or dealing with them if they do happen? And in my view, the only real issue is what happens if valid instructions to the IANA group aren't carried out, or what I think would be bizarre and very unlikely, what happens if the IANA group does something that it has not been instructed to do? And how do you protect or deal with those? That's a relatively well-defined and very restricted set of issues, and I think could be dealt with very expeditiously. And then when you come all the way down the line and say, okay, what structures do we need? My guess is that a single structure of unbiased and unfettered people who have complete access to the data and complete ability to speak about it provide more than enough protection, given that we don't have any worked examples of things having gone wrong in the past. So it isn't if we have had terrible events that we're protecting against in the future.
All right. I'm going to ask Eduardo Diaz to speak and then have a couple comments. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. I see these functions as a two-prong type functions, like, and I think Steve mentioned it a while ago. And basically, the way I see it is IANA is basically a clerical function. It takes instructions and they perform them. And there might be some risk, like Steve said, you know, what if they don't do what they are told to do? But the other part that is related to the IANA function but is not performed by IANA is, you know, the people of the organization that may value judgments about, let's say, delegations and delegations about X, Y, Z, you know, that's not an IANA-related function the way I see it, but it's related to the whole process. And when we talk about separability here or, you know, things going wrong, I think it has to do mostly with the, you know, those value judgments that are done that will direct Diana to do something later on. Thank you.
If I might, in the silence here, that's where the big risks are, and other mechanisms have to be in place to protect or react to anything that goes wrong there. But in the, I'll call it the cleaned up situation after the transition, there should be greater clarity about where those decisions are made and what recourses or protections or both are available. And I think it's in everybody's advantage to not have them conflated with the notion of what IANA is. In the numbers area, in the ITF area, all the value judgments are made outside of ICANN. In the names area, we have all the judgments made within ICANN, but logically outside of IANA, and going forward, we should make it organizationally clean and distinct so that they're not viewed as IANA decisions or even except to the extent that we need technical information from the IANA group shouldn't be viewed as intertwined with IANA at all.
Okay. So let me tell you how I have come to our work, and I certainly take the points you're making, Steve, but we had, I think there was something in the order of 50 written submissions in respect to the CWD's proposal. There were there was at least one specific proposal from the registries on specific changes that they would like to see in the proposal, but it still included a contracting entity. ALAC expressed considerable concern about a contracting co, and certainly Google was particularly concerned about some of the risks around contract co. So, and AUDA, I think, was equally concerned. So I think, and I say, and einfund.ca, there were a number of concerns in the CC community about the risks and understanding of contract co and whether an alternative option had, you know, had been properly assessed. So certainly my agreement to try and lead this group was based on, okay, let's try and really have a dispassionate, neutral look at an option that would not have contract co, and that's how I'm suggesting we do our work. And while I certainly take some of the comments been made as valid, I'm really at a loss to do what to do with them, because they would imply that we sort of roll back and construct a whole brand new option starting from scratch. Now, is that what I'm saying? And if that's where we are, I'd just like some comment on whether that's what the focus of the group will be, or whether something more focused, as I've suggested. Thanks.
Well, let me say yes to what you said, except to make it feel much smaller and more comfortable than you are suggesting. You take contract co off the table, and you're a good fraction down the path. So you could say, okay, we don't need a contract co. Are we done? And now you have to go and say, well, what would be missing? I don't want to. I mean, it's for this group to figure out what's comfortable and what the answer to that ought to be. But start with whatever problem it is, with a clear statement of what problem has to be solved, and then only postulate the necessary mechanisms to do that. And you know, and as I've said a few times, an enormous part of the solution will be clarity about access into the operation and the ability to speak about it. figuring out if something has gone terribly wrong. I can't imagine, frankly, that the execution of the ANA function has gone wrong in isolation of everything else. I mean, it's a peculiar scenario to imagine that ICANN itself is humming along perfectly except for the small detail that it's screwing up the updates of the root zone. Almost certainly a lot of other stuff would have to be out of control before you'd get to the point where that operation would be screwed up enough to trigger any of the things we're talking about. So almost, you know, in anything I could reasonably imagine, there would have to be heavy-scale interdiction or intervention in the larger ICANN processes, not just, sort of a clean surgical removal of the IANA function and then saying everything else is okay.
Okay, thank you, Steve. So, Alan Greenberg. Alan, please.
Thank you. I don't have the background or the in-depth knowledge to know whether the kinds of changes that Steve is suggesting to the separation of things that should be in IANA and things that are there today but shouldn't be, whether his separation is the right one or not. And I don't even think that's within our mandate to look at. I will point out, however, that in the contract co-model, it would be almost impossible to make that separation later, whereas what we're talking about, that is transferring the responsibility to ICANN, it would then be something that, with the support of the multi-stakeholder community, we could do that separation and dissect the parts and end up with a much cleaner operation and, in fact, something which could be divested or transferred somewhere else at a later time with far less impact than it would if we tried to do that today.
Thank you, Alan. Paul Kane? Paul?
Thank you very much. This is Paul Kane for the record. I think we need to be, we have a duty to make sure that we investigate all aspects of any transition proposal. And that includes a contract co. I personally would like to understand the ramifications of having a contract company. The main goal of having the parameters under which the current operator, who has done a good job in providing root zone management services to the CCTLD community, the main parameters under which they would lose that right and how transition would happen to another party that was more technically competent. So the reason for my interest in understanding the benefits and the disadvantage of contract co is so that we can have an informed debate and we can inform the CC community and the GTLD community of the rationale as to why we took a particular path, whatever that path is. So I would think it premature to remove from consideration having a contract, having a contract co, having a mechanism where someone mentioned the nuclear option. I think we need to consider all aspects to make sure that the IANA remains an independent body. Whether ICANN exists or doesn't in the future, that's irrelevant. The IANA function is a technical function which can be clearly defined within technical parameters. I would just like to emphasize that ICANN staff, who have been administering the IANA for a number of years, have been doing a good job, and long may that continue. But they must remain servants of the community they serve, and should they fail to do that, there needs to be ramifications for the IANA staff.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Paul. Greg Chatton, please.
Greg Chatton, for the record. Thank you, Alan. I don't disagree with much of what Paul Kane just said. But I think that it's a question of where and by whom in this process we do those other examinations. I don't think that the remit of this or the purpose of this Group 3B is narrow. But that does not mean that what's not within the remit of this group has been tossed out of the plans for the working group as a whole. We have RFP 4, which is supposed to look at ramifications and stress tests and the like. And we have, in terms of looking at scenarios that involve contract co and the pros and cons thereof, which we have been discussing for quite some time, you know, we have RFP 3 for that. I think the idea here is, if I may, is to come up with a non-contract co, non-contract solution or proposition which appears as viable to those who are interested in contract co solutions would find that solution to be. So the idea is basically to see how good a proposal without contract co we can build. That doesn't mean that other things are off the table elsewhere. It's just that to focus this group on getting kind of a work product in a relatively short period of time, need to pick a relatively discrete task. Lastly, I would say that we need to go back to, I think, the idea of a functional analysis, which I think has kind of three aspects, which are to make sure that we're all on the same page with regard to the IANA functions, or maybe another way to phrase that is the tasks carried out by the IANA function operator. We need to be clear with what functions were carried out by NTIA in its relationship with the IANA functions operator. And we need to be clear about what we thought we were solving for when we put contract co and the contract in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. I'd like to go back to something Steve said earlier, if I could just take the floor for a moment. And I think he said, what if we take contract co off the table, what's missing? And I actually think that is a good focus for us to spend a moment with, because without contract co, there is no mechanism by which ICANN is legally obligated to perform the IANA functions, as it now is currently legally obligated under the contract it has with the NTIA. So that's the first element that I think we have to deal with, and you know, the first function we have to replicate, to use, I think, Steve's view. And secondly, we have to talk about what are the set of consequences for non-performance of those functions or inadequate performance of the functions. And everyone has talked about separability, and so I think that is, for me, the construct and the playing field I think we're focusing on. So perhaps now would be a good time just to have Paul walk us through what Aldo was talking about, because I think it speaks to both of these aspects of a variant to the Frankfurt proposal. Paul?
Alan, thank you. It's, pardon me, for the record, Paul Schindler here. Yes, look, I had my hand raised earlier because I was going to echo what turned out to be some of the comments that Greg made and Alan's just repeated there, that my understanding was that there are other fora, other groups that can look at and can progress an option going forward, assuming the construction of a contract co. My understanding was that this group would be the avenue through which a non-contract co model would be explored. The final outcome of the group we can't presuppose. It may well be we find out, certainly following relevant legal advice, that such a construct or what we're proposing or investigating it may not be possible. But at the moment, for the sake of balance, all options need to be considered. And I note that the CWG in their draft proposal spoke about, they actually acknowledged and internal to ICANN or a non-contract co model, but there was no explanation, no detail, because no work had been done to draw out that model. So for the time being, I thought this would be an appropriate forum to look at the alternative structure. Quite simply, the outer proposal, which I will circulate to the group again, given that we've discussed it at length already on this call, is quite simple. Elements of it I don't believe this group needs to get into, because we went into a quite a bit of detail as to what a CSC could look like, or what CSC functions or MRT functions could look like, and we also have put forward quite a few ideas regarding what would trigger a rebid process in the case of significant failure of the current IANA operator. So it is a proposal that covers the whole range of issues the CWG is considering. But with regards to this particular group, our fundamental tenet was it's been recognised by the CWG and others that the current operation of the naming functions in particular is generally satisfactory to its customers. So everybody's assuming that the work being done, and Steve's mentioned it a couple of times on this call, is being done well. We haven't explicitly stated it in our proposal, but we share Steve's view that it is a narrow function. It's a narrow responsibility. If you were to take that out, the policy-related functions would continue to exist in the bodies that they do currently. So GNSO or the CCNSO. So we take that narrow definition of what IANA does. And built on that, we therefore assume that all change should be, and I think Steve said it again, or perhaps it was someone else, maybe Stefan said it, we should take a minimalist approach. You shouldn't. Our main concern was that this huge construct had developed, headed by Contract Co. and then the various sub-organisations, when essentially it looks like we're taking a sledgehammer to cracking a nut. If we understand the issue at hand is a narrow one, is a specific one, we could then, with that assumption, move forward proposing light models, as minimalist as possible, to oversee the current role. The one part, the only part, and I won't, there's no need for me to read through our entire proposal, but the key option was that the only oversight of the IANA function be something that we're the ones that called it the nuclear option, and that has its genesis here in .au for a number of years, and I was actually on the government side when this was established. We have a nuclear option based in legislation over a critical failure of .au. So where we as the functions operator for .au as a CC manager can only be affected by government intervention if we're grossly negligent or there's some sort of significant material breach. In other words, day-to-day operations can't be interfered with by government, or could not be interfered with by whatever this other entity would be, but that there be some power that could be used in the case of gross failure. I take Steve's point that is extremely unlikely, but it still needs to be there. Likewise, the failure of .au is extremely unlikely, but the option still needs to be there. So as opposed to an entity, we just were proposing a power, an option, where the operator is held to account and an intervention can be made, and what that's by, who that's by, what that structure looks like, what that group looks like, well, that's part of the broader discussions we're having. But our fundamental tenet is that there is just some sort of power built in, a singular power that could intervene and therefore launch a rebidding process, or, again, getting back to the example of Australia.
Paul,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think people in the Adobe Connect room have lost sound. And so I think we need to reconnect. I don't know if anyone who is not on the audio line is able to hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I stepped away from my computer, so I'll pause for now until you advise otherwise.
Okay, 1 minute, please. We'll get everything back on track. Hi, everyone. This is Grace Abu-Hamid for the record. We are back online. Everyone should have their microphones enabled again, and the recordings are still going. So we can go back to Paul, I believe. If, Paul, you could start from the beginning of your comments, I think that would be best, because I don't know when exactly everyone dropped off.
Thank you for that. And again, please let me know verbally if there's on the audio line if there's any more difficulties with the Adobe Room. For those that heard everything I've said already, I'll attempt to be succinct in my second run through. Fundamentally, the ALDA proposal, as it's called, is something that I will first of all share it with the whole group. It's a very light read. It is structured to look at all elements of the current CWG proposal, so there are aspects that are not relevant to this, not necessarily relevant to this group. We address how the CSC function or what is proposed to be a CSC, MRT, etc. So those elements aren't immediately relevant. We, as a fundamental tenet, take that the function currently is being performed well. It is, as Steve has said, a relatively simple and narrow function. Assuming that definition, we therefore believe any changes, as others have suggested, should be minimalist rather than a large construct which has potentially four different heads. Again, assuming that it's a narrow function, we therefore propose that essentially all that's required is some sort of, as we've called it, a nuclear option for intervention in a case where the IANA operator is grossly negligent or in material breach. Again, as Steve has said previously, that is incredibly unlikely. However, the construction of some sort of mechanism to deal with that scenario should be developed. Our analogy is the arrangements we have here in Australia, where the Australian government has enshrined in legislation the powers to intervene if we, .au, as a CCTLD operator, are grossly negligent in the operation of our role. Again, it's incredibly unlikely that we would do so or that would happen. However, the powers are there. And those powers allow for both the removal of the function from us as operator or for the government to direct us as operator to act in a particular way. I understand that there's a significant difference between what we're discussing here and something enshrined in legislation. However, the principle is very similar, so that they're not and we haven't proposed a specific entity or a body or a structure, but rather it's the power somehow captured and defined that there be a mechanism for intervention and possibly rebidding. The specific reference we made was to a golden bylaw in similar to the corporate idea of a golden share, and that means that there would be certain circumstances where ICANN would be required to put the IANA function out to rebid. And then we go into quite a lot of detail. We actually drill down further as to what that rebid process would look like. But essentially, when it comes to the oversight function, we weren't proposing an entity per se, but rather a power. And then who that power would be invested in, well, that's the subsequent discussion by this group. And at the risk of monopolizing the call, Alan, I'll stop there. That was the key of our proposal as it relates to the discussions of this group.
So thank you, Paul. Maybe I'll pause just to see if anyone has any specific questions of Paul on that are perhaps germane to our discussion here. But I think he goes to the main elements or the functions, use Steve's word, that I think we're trying to address here. That is to say, how do we bind ICANN to perform the IANA functions? What are the consequences for non-performance? What's the process to determine if there's been a breach of that undertaking, as it were? And so that's really how I see us trying to do that. That is to say, trying to replicate what is being done with Contract Co. in a fashion that involves neither a corporate entity or a contract. So with that, I'll pass to Steve Crocker again. Steve, please.
Thank you, and I appreciate the summary of the OUTA proposal. The singular difference, or signal difference, between the OUTA situation and the one we're dealing with is that there is a single government that is the natural superseding body, if you will. It's the essence of the environment we're in that we do not have a single governmental organization or any other obvious thing. That's both the challenge and the really positive aspect of operating a truly global operation that's multi-stakeholder. There's just a lack of definition of anything at the top, and in fact, the U.S. government has been playing that role nominally and is stepping out, not with the intention that it be replaced by something else, but that it be replaced, if at all, by consent of the community through a multi-stakeholder operation. So that all sounds a little vague. The concrete embodiment of that, in my view, is not to try to gin up substitute structures that are the other side, that handle a contract or that have some new authority, because then it's just an infinite regress to exactly the processes that went into creating ICANN. What would happen in practice if the IANA function went awry would be much simpler and much more direct, and it would be simply revolution in the streets. You would have enormous community outpouring, you would have enormous pressure from all quarters, and you would have some form of constitutional convention. I think that it's not actually necessary, and in fact a quagmire, to try to define that process, but I have 100% certainty that if the events that we're imagining took place and the IANA function came apart, that there'd be no question that there'd be enormous involvement, pressure, action, and things would happen pretty quickly. The ICANN organization as it stands would never survive the kind of pressure that I'm imagining we brought in. And then in addition, ICANN is not an insular, isolated operation. It's extremely porous. That's the whole business of it being a multi-stakeholder. There'd be people inside of ICANN, up, down, in the middle, on the staff, on the board, in the SOs and ACs, all taking action. So in some sense, the lack of a very specific kind of judicial or contractual process is a feature rather than a weakness.
Well, Steve, I have to say that certainly, as one of the people that was in Frankfurt, everyone that I talked to believes that the IANA functions are being executed in a very satisfactory fashion. But I think maybe some difference of view is that many in the community see that as being a direct consequence of there being a contract in place, a contract that is periodically reviewed and renewed, and that has been the point of departure for many in the community. And what we're trying to do here is to look to say, is there a way that we can preserve the dynamic without having a contract code? And that's really the focus of the work that I'm proposing that we do. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think this is the working group to have that discussion.
Well, I know it's going to be hard because we're all operating in the dark, but I think the assumption that the NTIA administration has been the source of stability for the IANA operation, I'll just say for what it's worth, that I think that's completely wrong. And the unfortunate thing is that their actions over the years have been in camera, have been hidden and behind the scenes, and one doesn't actually see what they have done. I've had a little bit, not complete, but a little bit more access than many of the people. And for what it's worth, I'll tell you, I think they've been more of a destabilizing force than a stabilizing force. But there's no reason why my statement carries any more weight than anybody else's. But the assumption that their existence has been the safeguard and has caused the whatever improvements and stability in the IANA function is only an assumption based upon lack of information rather than it must be so because it's there.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you. I'd like to address some of Steve's comments, and then I'm going to give a try to answer some of the core questions that were asked before. I 100% support the concept that if something starts going wrong, the first recourse will be there will be discussions, there will be attempts to fix it, and there's a good chance, as has been in the past, that the problem will be rectified. So that's number one. Number two, I do not doubt that the kind of insurrection and riots in the streets that Steve is talking about might well happen if things went really awry. But presuming they will happen, presuming that they will not only happen, but the outcome will be satisfactory, in my mind, has too much of a trust me tone to it. We're talking about this entity that is essentially managing the soul of the Internet, the root of the Internet, and I'm using that term with multiple meanings. And so, that may not be accurate, but that is the emotional impact.
Well, that's the emotional thing, but one point of clarity. They're not managing in the sense that word usually is used, the content of the root zone. That's being done elsewhere. They are executing instructions for making changes, and the point of the IANA contract is that has to be done with a high degree of accuracy and efficiency and timeliness. Management of the contents of the root zone is actually done back upstream where we were talking about earlier, where the value judgments are being made to the extent that there are any value judgments involved.
Steve, I understand all that, but this is an emotional discussion, and we have to accept that. At least I have to accept that. And I believe what the community wants to see is a fallback path should all hell break loose and things not work. Now, it may well be that plan never gets exercised and the riots in the street and the insurrection takes precedence over it and supersedes any plan that we put in place. But I think we need some sort of plan, whether it actually gets carried out or not.
All right. So if I might, I'll just play back what I think you've said, Alan, that the community wants the emotional satisfaction of having a well-defined path for dealing with some disastrous situation should it ever happen. And they want that not because that's the factually correct thing to do, but because it'll make them feel better to have something defined on paper now as opposed to left undefined.
I would support that. And we're dealing to a large extent with how people are reacting to this emotionally with a whole bunch of different motives. Let's face it, many people are going into this with specific ends in mind. That's a reality we have to deal with. Let me talk a little bit about what the at-large foresaw in how this would be handled. In other words, how do we remove contract code from the solution? Because I think that's what this working group is supposed to be doing. The presumption is that the IANA responsibility be awarded to ICANN. That would have to be embodied in some sort of documentation. Presumably there would be some bylaw changes and some other documents, and I'm not going to try to I'm not the lawyer who will say what belongs in bylaws and what belongs in some other documents that will guide ICANN, but it essentially we need to make sure that there is a breadcrumb trail which says why ICANN is now going to be responsible for what it was responsible based on the contract. So that's part number one. And part number two is to handle the day-to-day operations. We may need some infrastructure that is different from what we have had before, either because we've simply learned something in the interim, or we need to add an extra level of certainty to the community, given that the NTIA is not watching over this, in theory. And lastly, we need a process by which, if all hell breaks loose, then somehow the multi-stakeholder community can ensure that we find a new home for IANA, which, if ICANN has proven unable to carry out the responsibilities. And whether that's done through divestiture, through a rebid, through going to a trustee who rebids under certain specifications, that's something that needs to be talked about. But essentially, those are the major components that we're looking at. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So I don't know. We seem to be going in circles a bit today. So I'd like to see if the Swedes can contribute to this. Stefan, you're up next.
Thank you, Alan. So I'd like to continue on Steve's reasoning as well when he says there is no judicial single superseding government with a judicial system in it. So, and that leading to fear the capture of the functions, of course. But how to avoid this fear of capture? Well, the very easy answer is to take away the incentives, and that is to depoliticize the functions themselves. And I still think this is possible to do, to take away these incentives. And then, yes, there is a good way to have a fallback plan as well. But focus must be on the definitions again, the definitions of the actual functions and how we can make them as uninteresting for capture as possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. Paul Kane, and then I'm going to suggest a bit of a way forward if I might. Thank you.
Thank you. This is really coming back to Steve's point. I would say that those of us that use the IANA and have used the IANA for a significant number of years, we are not interested in emotions at all. We just want the IANA to work efficiently in a fully distributed manner, as it used to do, and unfortunately in recent times seems to be becoming more centralized. So the proposal that has been put forward for automation of root zone management, which is contained within the existing contract, which ICANN, IANA have been offering the CC community for some time, but not actually delivering it, I would urge that moves forward and the distributed model is fully embraced and therefore avoids the risk, as Stefan highlighted, of the fear of capture and the fear of the mechanism that IANA uses becoming centralized, so therefore making capture easier. There are many parties that can do the IANA function. Certainly the CC community want ICANN to continue being the IANA operator, but certainly do want to see distributed and decentralized model using automated tools deployed as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So no emotions. This is a simple technical function that should not be political and should ensure that the CC community is able to serve their community appropriately. So I'm interested in exploring all avenues, including not having a contract co, but I do think one does need to define clearly the parameters under which IANA functions and what happens if and when IANA does not function efficiently and the community need to replace the IANA operator.
So, thank you, Paul. So, I don't know how much further we can take this today. There seems to be a difference of view of the scope and focus of the group. I certainly hear that. Some people, Steve Corker, I think you're even seeing the premise of the overall CWG proposal itself, as you're certainly welcome to do. What I've been trying to do is to scope and focus our work so that we could potentially produce, you know, a straw man option that focuses on without a contract code. And I think as Paul Schindler alluded to, this is going to turn on probably ICANN bylaws or resolutions, and a lot of those issues will involve getting some outside legal advice. In other words, if ICANN were to agree to something, to what extent can it actually bind itself going forward? And there is some progress being made within the CWG towards getting that outside legal advice. So this is just a plea that see what we can do to move forward on this narrowly scoped piece of work so that we can develop some questions that we could put into the hopper to have some consultation with outside legal counsel on them. So there is a tight timing issue here. I certainly take the point that we have to go back and look at the functions that are trying to be replicated. That point is a well taken. I guess it's something I could have done in the past. So maybe what I'll do with staff is to try and do that and have a discussion of that at the outset of our next call if people feel that would be a useful next step. I see Greg Shatton's hand is up. Greg?
Greg Shatton, raised my hand before your last statement, so I'm not directly responsive, but I would say that this call demonstrated that if we're not going to focus the task before this group tightly, we will be at whatever our task is for a long time. And that doesn't mean that those other tasks are without merit, doesn't mean that they can't be carried out even simultaneously with this task, but that there was a specific reason for which this group was created, and the idea was to bring something back to the CWG in general that involved neither contract nor contract co because of interest in such a solution, and that I think if we stick to that, we can come up with something in a relatively short order. If we keep opening new roles for the group, we're not going to get anywhere in this group in the time frame in which the core remit was intended to be taken care of. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. So I'm not going to repeat myself. I'm really proposing to end the call now and to return, as I mentioned before, with some kind of functional analysis and ask again. We can get agreement at least pro tem on what the focus of the work of this RFP 3B group would be. Any Cheryl and Alan have comments. So, Cheryl, please.
I'm sorry, I was still on mute. It's not actually a comment to that last part, Alan. It's a request that we close off after we've established if we need any flexibility for those of us who are entrenched in Frankfurt with the accountability CCWG next week, or travelling to and from when the next scheduled call is. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Well, so let me ask you this, Cheryl. It's your and I take it, well, maybe I'll let Alan Greenberg to speak, who is in Frankfurt. I mentioned the link to the legal advice for which some steps are being taken. I think this is critical. So we'll have to see, and maybe I can ask Grace as well to comment on whether there's an opportunity for even a short call when everyone is in Frankfurt. Alan?
Thank you. I certainly support what Cheryl said, since I'm one of the people who is involved there, and there are at least a few others who are actively involved in the accountability process that will, that in theory are participating in this group, even if they're not on the call today. What I was going to say is the analysis of what exactly IANA does, I'm not sure that's going to, I understand several people have said that it's important that we do that first, but really we are looking at what IANA does today, and it almost doesn't matter what it is. We have to transfer that responsibility to someone. And I'm not sure why the detailed list of tasks alters the process of how to, transfer the responsibility. I mean, yes, at some point we're going to have to know exactly what it is so we can write it in documents. But I'm not sure we need to do that today to embody the concepts that we're looking for. But I may be in a minority. Thank you.
Alan, this is Alan Goldie. I actually think it's relatively straightforward to do that, to the extent that it could help some people to conceptualize what we're doing and why. I think it's useful. I don't think it's a large effort. I'm envisaging a single page. So unless there's any strong objections, I'm going to propose that we wrap things up today. I'll have an offline discussion with Grace and the support staff about how the conflict of the Frankfurt meeting of the accountability group would affect our work. So thank you, everyone, and we'll be talking. Bye.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, everyone. Bye.